listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. Merry Christmas. Yes, yes, yes. It's here we are in December with our show. And welcome to the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne is going to be out this week, but it's okay. He'll be back the next time. And, but you know what? We have a special guest with us today. That's right. You know, on this show, we've talked about coaching from a lot of different capacities, but we also have a pretty solid part of the show that deals with mixed martial arts fighters, right? UFC. We've had UFC fighters on here, promoters, coaches, cornermen. We've had PFL and BKFC fighters and talent on the show. But this is a great opportunity to welcome Alec Hrenishin. Did I say it right?
Close. It's Alec Hrenishin, but no worries, no worries. Quick, everyone messes it up. It's it happens.
Yeah, it is. Well, Alec, thanks for coming on today, man. I met Alec several years ago, and Alec is kind of not a UFC fan. He's like a UFC aficionado. He's a UFC maven. He could be a UFC, he could be on the sports, talking about statistics and fighting and those things. So I've known Alec over the years. We've gone to many fights together at the same time. Thanks for coming on the show. First of all, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Bruce, for inviting me on the show. I really do appreciate it. I'm excited to talk.
I'm excited too. And like you said, we had a little pre-production call yesterday, and man, we just could have gone hours and hours and hours. And so we'll just see where this goes. This is going to go really, really fast, but hey, let's go ahead and do it. I guess I'll start with, you and I have been fans for quite a while. We've gotten involved with seeing, experiencing, let's say, UFC at a fairly extreme level, VIP type level, being able to interact with fighters. We both have social media accounts that are pretty active and everything, and visiting with fighters. So kind of tell our listeners and viewers, like, hey, what got you into to UFC, and then then part two of that is how have you seen UFC progress over the last 4 or 5 years? What changes have you seen in the franchise in the last 4 or 5 years? So go ahead.
So growing up, I would hear a lot of names thrown around, like Chuck Liddell, Anderson Silva, John Jones, Randy Couture. This was when I was maybe 10 or 11. This was back in the day, again, when the pay-per-views were the main thing. There really wasn't fight nights like today. And I remember a lot of my friends would really talk about it. They'd be into it. It always piqued my interest. I started really getting into the UFC and MMA in general, I'd say in the early 2010s. So like 2011, 2012 is when I really started getting involved in like watching it. Once I got to college, I could start paying for my own pay-per-views, and me and my buddies would get together and we'd watch the pay-per-views. And once, like ESPN bought the UFC or bought the rights to broadcast UFC, it became a lot easier to watch fights, every week. Mm-hmm. And so I've been a fan for a good amount of time now. I would say that around 2018, 2019 is when I really started tuning into like every fight. I would watch all the big pay-per-views beforehand, but it wasn't really until then I started watching the fight nights as much. And then kind of going on to your second question, when 2020 happened, the pandemic, and there was no sports to watch, all there was to bet on and to watch was the UFC for a couple of weeks there. So everyone tuned in, and including myself, I really started focusing in every single week, watching, looking up all the fighters, their records and the stats and everything, really getting involved into it way before like I was in the past. And to answer your question about the last 4 or 5 years, how I've seen the UFC progress, I think one of the biggest thing was ESPN, again, buying the rights to broadcast, I really think that's gotten out to a broader, more like fan base that was not, you know, traditionally an MMA fan or into the sport, thought it was too violent or whatever. And then again, COVID, I really think that when people were bored, they had nothing else to do. They were sitting at home. There was no other sports to watch or bet on. They started tuning in, and I think the UFC did a great job. And to go off on that too, Dana White is remarkable in the sense that he didn't fire any of his, you know, employees. He kept them working. He figured out a way to keep the fights going when they went over to Abu Dhabi and did the Fight Island thing. So I really think that helped the UFC progress. And then the sponsorships and all of that, it's really grown. I've seen more people in today's world that are MMA UFC fans than 10 years ago. I mean, it wasn't as big as it was, or it is now.
I agree. Just to kind of give, I'm going to give you a few seconds to do the calculation. Since 2018 to today, December 11th, 2023, how many live fights have you been to?
Okay, so I've been to 33 live fights. I'll be to my 34th one this Saturday at UFC 296 in Las Vegas. I've been to a number of pay-per-views, fight nights. I've been to the Apex. I've even been blessed to have been able to attend one of Dana White's Contender Series cards at the Apex. So it will be 34 this Saturday.
34. And that's quite a career. I mean, that is quite a, especially in just a 5 year, not even a 5 year, probably 4.5 year, you know, timeline. So that is impressive, man. I think, you know, that when you told me that was just like, oof, you know, I mean, this is a guy who's been there, you know, and I always pull up on your Instagram, like, man, there he is in the, you know, there he is in the Apex, there he is this week, you know, in Vegas, there he is over here, you know, and I mean, he's been to even Kansas City. We'll talk about that in a minute, right? you know what? Let's go ahead and go there. So part of what we like to do, I mean, I'll speak for myself. I shouldn't just drag you into it. Part what I like to do is I like to meet the fighters. I like to meet the fighters and talk to them for a few minutes. I mean, I know you do too. I've seen you, you know, hold court there with some fighters, with Pfeiffer and some others this last time in Austin. You did a good job there. But anyway, I enjoy meeting the fighters, and it's kind of fun, you know. And the thing I like about most or nearly all of the fighters, they're pretty normal guys and ladies too. You know what I mean? They'll talk to you. You know, they're just kind of normal people, if you will. And I like that, you know, and I like that.
Sure.
They have a fan ethic. I mean, you know, now that I'm, you know, older and gray and all this other stuff, hey man, can I get your picture? Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. I remember Macy, the Future Barber, 2019 in Vegas. And it was an accident, but I was going to try to get a picture. It was her and her dad. I didn't realize she was about ready to eat. It's terrible. I'm so embarrassed. But anyway, so I roll up to them, you know, those high top bar tables in the VIP thing in Vegas, right? So I roll up there. But, oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were going to eat. I'll come back. I was going to get a picture with you. Bro, her dad flew out. Her dad's a big dude, right? Flew out of his chair. Sir, you come back here. Macy, stand up. Put your arms around him. I mean, dude, you think she was my daughter I never had, right? Picture's over there somewhere. Anyway, so, right? It's, there she was. Okay, thank you very much. You know, so and she was, you know, very, very nice. Me, the fighters, the same night, Alec, I kid you not, the same night, you get the notification. So the UFC or the sponsoring, was it on location?
Yes.
They send you a text of, hey, you know, Derek Lewis, Israel Adesanya, blah, blah, blah. You know, they've entered the VIP area, right? So you can kind of keep track who's there. Well, on one of the older notices was Glover Teixeira, right? And this is when Glover was fighting. And, you know, when Glover was fighting. So I go to my wife and I said, man, have you seen Glover? And she's like, he's right there. He was eating right next to me at the table, wearing a ball hat and a flannel shirt. And his beard was growing out. He was looking at me like, can I help you or something? Anyway, and he was a sweet guy. Glover lives in Danbury, Connecticut, you know, has his gym there and is more a Northeasterner than he is a Brazilian. But no, I'm just kidding. Good dude, right? I mean, just good guy. I mean, just talk about lessons, giving lessons and stuff like that. Anyway, so it's just so much fun to see these guys and women, you know, that are, and talk to them, you know, and just kind of, I think it adds an appreciation for the sport, who they are and stuff like that. What are your thoughts about the fan experience of talking to fighters?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with everything you said. And you know, going to the fights the first couple times, I was a little like more hesitant. I was kind of that person that thought, you know, like maybe they really didn't want to interact with you. Kind of like how you said, like, you know, you were kind of like, oh no, she's eating Macy Barber. Like, let me wait. But you really find out, you know, these fighters, they're a lot of them. I mean, I would say every single one, I've never had a bad interaction. They're all extremely humble. They all want to chat. They all want to get a picture. They all want to like get to know you. I mean, most of the time they'll ask me what my name is and like, you know, what do I do? And you never really expect that. You know, I grew up going to Spurs games, NFL right. games. I've met other athletes. A lot right. of them would shun you for pictures or would not give you even a second of their time. I could say this hands down of all the athletes I've met, UFC fighters, MMA fighters, like especially through On Location, they're the most humble, kind, generous people willing to, you know, just sit there, grab a drink with you and, you know, talk about the fights, you know, life, whatever.
Right. you're absolutely right. So, you know, so in this pursuit, if you will, for me, I guess, the pursuit of, hey, you want to meet the fighters, you know, and go up there and enjoy. We usually go there. The doors open at around 2. We get processed in. We go into this VIP area. There'll be a serving line of food. There'll be a bar, open bar-ish, and a serving line of food. Pretty typical beverage napkins, you know, plastic plates, but wings, you know, the typical stuff that you might see. And then the fighters kind of gradually kind of come in and packs of 3 or 4. And then there'll be a pause and 3 or 4 more, right? And then there'll be a pause or whatever. So back in the day, even on some of the fight nights, but certainly the pay-per-views, there's this expectation that we'd see about how many fighters. Let's say a pay-per-view fight, VIP, you know, like a Houston level, Houston, Phoenix, even well, not Vegas. Now, you can't really count Vegas, right? Because a lot of the fighters live in Vegas, the franchise headquartered out of Vegas. So, of course, anything in Vegas is going to be good, right?
Sure.
Pretty good.
So, yeah, I would say like on average, you know, like with Vegas, the pay-per-views, I would expect from my experience, there's usually around 10 to 20. Again, Vegas is the exception, but I would say pay-per-views 10 to 20. Fight nights, I've seen as little as 2. I've seen maybe as many as 5, 6. It really just depends on the fight, the location. You know, but again, Vegas is the exception. I mean, there's always a big number of fighters that come through.
But you know what? I mean, I don't know if you went to Phoenix 1 year, but I mean, God, I'm blanking out. Justin Gaethje. So it's Gaethje, Eric Anders, the other gentleman. Oh my God, anyway, like Phoenix had a big crowd. You know what I mean? In the VIP area, and then the Diazes were interested. Right. Nick and Nate, you know, we're kind of in and around and Kelvin Gastelum. There you go. You know, so there's a you know, Phoenix turned out to be kind of a sleeper, but it was the area was like, did you ever been to Phoenix?
Yeah, I was at UFC 274 when Gaethje fought Oliveira and that they had a very big club. That was a very big club. And yeah, a lot of fighters came through that night. I remember that was one of the biggest stars that night, like at the time, was Paddy Pimblett, but
it's
kind of changed a little bit since his last fight against Jared Gordon. But we all know who won that fight.
Who won that fight? So yeah, so Phoenix. So you were at, I guess, I don't know. So you were at a venue. It obviously wasn't Vegas or a place like Houston or Dallas. But you went to a venue, and there are only 2 fights. Like, 2 fighters come into the Wow, was that a pay-per-view and it was only two fighters, or was it a fight night with just two fighters?
No, so it was a fight night, and there were only, yeah, again, there was only two fighters that had come through. Again, with the fight nights and the geographical location of where it was at, this was Kansas City, I was thinking we'd be lucky to get 10. We'd be lucky to maybe get 7. I was a little shocked with 2. You know, going into the first off, the VIP lounge was actually not in the stadium. It was across the street. So that was also new for me too. It was like, all right, so we go over there, we go in, met the two fighters, and you know, great guys, and grabbed a little bit of food, some drinks. And you know, after about 20, 25 minutes, we were like, well, there, I mean, it was kind of just a consensus around the room. Like, there's no really reason to be here anymore. I mean, and everyone headed over to watch the fights, and it was a 2-hour VIP thing, or VIP experience. So you would think that they would have enough fighters there to make it worthwhile for 2 hours. So I've come to expect not to expect anything, I guess you should say.
Wow. See, and I'm the other way. I would have, bro, if I would have been to Kansas City and only seen two fires, I would have lost my mind. I'd be blowing up somebody's phone, you know, dropping somebody, you know what sure. I mean? I mean, like, hey, what's going on? Hey, you got more fans outside in the fan experience, you know what I mean? In the booths and stuff like that. Outside, you need to have those, at least those guys, those same guys that are outside, inside VIP, right? So, or whoever's sitting down on the floor, man, there's fighters chilling. Even in Kansas City, there had to have been at least 10 fighters on the floor, right? I mean, on the floor watching the damn fight, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's always at all the fights, there's at least 10, 12 plus fighters that are down on they're at the stadium. They might not come up to the VIP experience or whatnot, but they're at the arena or whatnot. And one thing I've never really understood with fighters not, you know, going is, let's say you're an up-and-coming fighter and you don't have a big fan base. That experience is perfect for you to build your fan base. You go there, you take pictures, you meet people who may never have watched any of your fights or don't know who you are. They got a picture with you. They talked with you for 5 minutes. Now they're following your Instagram. Now they're more willing to buy your merchandise. Now they're more willing to buy your next or a ticket to watch your next fight at any of the locations around the United States or wherever. I've never really understood why fighters don't take advantage of that. It's a perfect way to meet new people and get a networking experience, you know?
And that would be that we need to get a hold of, I forget the guy's name, in fighter development. There's a wing of UFC that's quote fighter development. And that would be a good thing for them to know. It's like, hey, you know, somebody, or maybe somebody who's won a contender series or somebody who's a prelim card fighter. You know, a lot of the people that aren't you and I, they're just going to say, hey, this guy's a fighter. And, you know, people are standing in line to get his picture. So they're going to get their picture with the fighter. You know, like you said, I met Puna Haley Soriano. Was he at Dallas or Austin? He was with us one night. I didn't even know who it was.
Vegas. That was the first time I met him. The only times I've seen him, if I remember correctly, was Vegas. But
he may have been somewhere else. Yeah, may have been somewhere else. And then, you know, last year, Austin, Cody Stamann comes up from his fight. You remember that? Cody Stamann actually fought, slapped a cowboy hat on with a black eye, came back up to VIP. Phil Hawes and a bunch of other people were there.
Yeah. Right?
And then they let us stay there the whole fight to watch, just to chill. Because fight to leave, you know?
Hey, yeah, I remember.
Go ahead. I was going to say, Holly Holm was up with us in Austin.
Yep.
Her and her bodyguard were kind of posted up. So guess what? You know, we lived to see another day, even though he didn't really matter. You know what I mean? But that you could still see the fights in the VIP area because Holly Holm, she didn't want to go anywhere.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Speaking of Austin, last year when you brought up Phil Hawes, he came up, at, you know, right after his victory. And it was really interesting just because that's not normal. Usually fighters don't come up after their fights, win or loss. But he had just gotten in a bloody war. He had, if I remember correctly, I think he had blonde hair. He dyed his hair blonde. Yes. His hair was red because of all the blood from his fight. And he came up, and that was one thing that I'll always remember. It was just like, wow. Like, you know, you just don't expect them to come up after their fights and hang out with everybody, which is really cool.
And so, folks, right there, that even this Austin was good. The Moody Center, Dana has a really good formula where he picks these venues that are like, they hold like what, 20,000 tops, right? Not the big guns, but usually a smaller one. Now, I shouldn't say it because we did do American Airlines Center in Dallas, but still, so there we were. Every seat in the house in either the Frank Irwin Coliseum in Austin, Texas, or the Moody Center in University of Texas campus, which is a pretty good sized place. Well, but every seat's good. Even if you're in the nosebleeds, you have a better seat than you would in the nosebleeds in Dallas. Just let me tell you that right now. So, and then, you know, then you get all these fighters. So and then usually Austin's a little bit less expensive for your package, right? Say a bigger place. So you get a real big bang for your buck. So other than a Vegas place, what was your best fan experience other than Vegas? Yeah.
You know, come to think of it, I think one of the best places that I've been to outside of Vegas was in Salt Lake City, back-to-back years. So UFC 278 and then UFC 291. The first one was the famous Kamaru Usman, Leon Edwards, where Leon got that Hail Mary head kick to win the belt. And then this past one was the Poirier-Gaethje BMF belt fight. But that was a really good experience. Both of the lounges were big. A good number of fighters were there on both nights. And yeah, I mean, I would say Salt Lake City is probably been the best. Phoenix was another good one for sure. At UFC 274. Trying to think. I've been to Dallas on a pay-per-view. That wasn't too bad. It was a little bit of a smaller venue for the lounge.
Yes.
Speaking wise, but honestly, most of the pay-per-view fights that I've been to have been in Vegas. They've been at the T-Mobile Arena. So, I enjoy always going to that one because, like we were saying earlier, there's probably, I mean, I think I've seen it max maybe 25 fighters.
Oh,
either retired, active, or, you know, on their way up.
2019. One of the ones, either December 2019 or one soon thereafter, I literally ran out of time. I ran out of runway until they kicked us out. Like, it's like fighter, you know what I mean?
Fighter,
bro. I barely had enough time to eat. It's like, boom, here, there. And they just kept on coming, man. And never forget, I was sitting next to Glover Teixeira. Cody Garbrandt comes around here. I literally, hey Cody, I'm a little bit taller than him, you know. Anyway, so I put my arm around like this Christmas tree, and like, hey man, and boom, wife takes a picture. I let go, you know, and then Joe Benavidez and Cub Swanson, they sat in front of us, you know. I hurl around there, get on my knee, I got Glover, Garbrandt. Then Brad Tavares, he comes out, you know, man, it's just, you know, Macy Barber, boom, 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 you know. But then there was this one fighter, y'all. And I don't know if I should say his name, but there have been a couple of people, Alec. So whatever. IA is his initial. He was too busy. He wouldn't interact with fans or whatever. And then another guy, I caught, it was Uriah Hall. He's no longer, but he was like, oh, I just hate this shit. I hate having to put on a fucking plastic smile for these people. And I rolled right up on him like, bro, like that's fucked up. Like, I can't believe you said that. Called his ass out.
That's surprising to hear that he would go up there and admit to the people that want to, you know, be there and see him that he's putting on a fake smile, but you know, everyone's different. I don't understand why anyone would go up there if they had no interest in interacting with fans. It makes no sense. Did we lose Bruce here?
There we are.
There we go.
There we go. Sorry, man. It was on my end. Sometimes, you
Happens.
know, if something just
Technology.
knocks. No, that was me. So anyway, so what did you say after I? It says, yeah. Anyway, that he, you know, I rolled up on him, and he was, you know, a little mildly embarrassed that he said that,
Yeah, I
but
mean,
anyway, but go ahead.
I've also met Uriah Hall, who's very nice when I met him, but I am shocked to hear that he would openly admit that he you know, quote unquote, put on a fake smile, doesn't want to be here. I mean, for me, I kind of look at it as, why would you even go up there if you have no interest in interacting? Because what do you expect? I mean, you go up there are fans that are paying a lot of money. They're expecting fighters to be in there. You would think everyone that wants to go up there is going to be more
Right.
than happy to take pictures, to talk, because that's the entire experience. That's what it's for.
I know, man. And, you know, I've seen him two or three times. You know, Houston was one. And I think he was in a Phoenix. He was good in Phoenix, but in Houston, he was wheels off. He was having a bad day and I rolled up on him. But anyway, you're there to promote your career. You're kind of an ambassador for the franchise, right? You need to put your best foot forward and go from there. So, and look, we've seen those fans back there, right? The guy with the Sharpie, and he has a teddy bear and a belt, and you know, and these guys are signing away thousands of dollars worth of eBay. Just kidding, eBay resales. Just kidding, but they're patiently signing the stuff, you know, going from there. How many times have we seen Chuck Liddell in Vegas and other places? Chuck's
Oh
just,
yeah.
Chuck's
He's a
always, man. Chuck's always friendly, man. Waits to the last person, you know, standing to get a picture with. I mean, it's Chuck Liddell, for God's sakes, you know, one of the gods of the sport. So anyway,
Certainly.
but
Yeah, he's one of the most popular guys that go. He's definitely one of the regulars. And yeah, I mean, Chuck Liddell was the first guy or male fighter that I ever heard the name of, like way back in like 2005. So it was Chuck Liddell and fighters like him, Randy Couture, Anderson Silva, that got me into the UFC. So it's really cool to see like a guy like Chuck Liddell and these Hall of Famers, or you know, these guys that fought way back in the day, going up there, especially for these younger fans, or maybe fans that don't really know the history, to go up there and meet some of these guys, because it's a great way to start going back and looking at these old fights and the history of the UFC, because it's grown exponentially since that time to now.
It absolutely has. Yeah, I met Matt Serra. Matt Hughes was here in Dallas in like 2014 or 13 or something. So yeah, it's been real fun, like you said, to go back into the history of the sport and see GSP. You know, how many Hall of Fame inductions? I went to one in 20, I guess, or 21. Have you been to any of the UFC Hall of Fame? So.
Yeah, so I went to the one that they did right after COVID. That was the night that John Jones was inducted with it for his fight against Gustafsson. I went to the one the year after, so this would have been 2022 when Khabib was inducted, and then I went to this past one in July, 2023. Anderson Silva was inducted, Jose Aldo, Jens Pulver. So yeah, they're really cool to go to. Definitely an experience for sure.
Yeah, it's different, man. I mean, they're not, those people are just talking, and man, they need somebody with a hook to get some of them off stage. They're a little long-winded. The John Jones thing was great. You know, he's very nice, pointed, I'd like to thank my Lord Jesus Christ, yada, yada, yada. Boom, gets locked up that night for assaulting a car or something. But hey, man,
Yeah.
never know with these guys. But anyway, so yeah, I, so. So anyway, so back with this kind of fan experience, right? You're expecting, you know, like I said, far and wide, you know, like I said, 99% of the fighters are great. You want to have enough time to interact with the fighters. But now there's a distinction with that now, right? Because now I think there's a thing like if it's not a pay-per-view, they'll have a more truncated, shorter VIP exposure time, and it only lasts like 2 hours. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so from my experience going to the fight nights, You're correct. The pay-per-views, they let you stay till the main card. So you're there from the early prelims to the start of the main card, which is usually 3 to 4 hours. And they also let you in an hour in before the early prelims start. So you get a really good amount of time to go in there and eat, interact with fighters, whatnot. The fight nights have been different, though. So I think the first time that I went to a fight night was in Austin in 2022. That was a different experience. They let people, like, I think yourself, they let you stay the entire night in the lounge.
I was talking about Orlando, came up Phil Hawes was one. Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yes, yeah. And then the next fight night that I went to was in the end of the year of 2022. It was Stephen Thompson versus Kevin Holland. Their VIP experience was only open for an hour. And I think a lot of people were very
where was that? Irritated. Where was that?
That was December 2nd, 2022. So that was just Orlando.
Oh, my
God. It was – every person I talked to in there, they were definitely ticked off, you know, for the amount of money that you're spending.
Yeah.
You'd expect at least – the prelims, but I think from then on location has taken feedback from people. Cause I really think a lot of people complained and rightfully so. They changed it to 2 hours, which I don't really agree with. I mean, I think that you should be able to stay there to the main card. I mean, if just like the pay-per-views, I mean,
it's not like, because that area that they're using, let's look at Austin that just happened, which we had a box and a suite before for VIP, and this time we're in this open area. That open area was just closed off, roped off, and that was that. So really doing nothing. And the bar was still open. They just said, okay, which was amazing. This is in Austin. The bar was still open, but it turned into a cash bar.
Yeah.
As soon as that the official time was over, but the bar was still there. Not that it doesn't matter to me, but for fans, like the bar was still there, bar was still open. You could get drinks still, right? I mean, so if it's a matter of like, oh, we don't want to pay for all this booze, then don't. Just say, hey, man, if the fighters want to stay up here, but the bar converts over to a cash bar at such and such a time. Hey, we're only going to roll out so much food, right, until such and such a time.
Sure.
So you know what I mean? So it's not as if they're really losing anything. That I mean, I understand. It's like, hey, we're losing $500 for every 10 minutes of open bar. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I get it, but to just cut the bar, leave it open. That way, the people can still mingle or whatever. I mean, Holly Holm stayed up there for quite a while in Austin. Holly, oh, wow. Dude, just kind of was watching the fight like this. Bodyguard standing behind her. Hey, what's up? Hey, what's going on? Just chatting up.
How long did you stay up there? Yeah. I left right when, like, kind of when they had that, you know, like, said it was over. I went down, I think, three fights into the card.
Dude, I was, like, up to the main card.
Okay, wow. So they let you stay up there. That's good, at least. Because I've been at past ones where they're like, you're out. Like, we're done.
Yeah, I mean, but I knew. Anyway, so, but I knew once I saw her chilling, like, no, let's hold the line. And we had that crazy guy, Karen, you know, that guy, Karen, anyway, with this other, the bald dude from Austin, he's kind of a fan. Anyway, that guy, he's an interesting personality. Let's just say that, right? Way more interesting than myself and my kids that are there. So he, you know. But we said, no, if Holly's here, we're going to stay at the line. They're simply not going to ask a fighter to leave. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
She had our left side flank. We're at the very end. It's like, so you're going to go through her to kick us out? No, you're not. See what I mean? So it was an excellent gestalt of body placement. So, but it was okay. I mean, I think my seats were maybe even a tad better than they were in the VIP viewing, you know? So, yeah.
Okay.
So what else is going on here? Well, man, we could talk about, I guess let's talk about the gambling side of it. I mean, I don't get it. Like, I thought DraftKings was an official partner. Now we see Slate, we see some other kind of crypto betting things. How's that been working? What is your sense of that?
Yeah, you know, so I used to bet a lot on the UFC in the past when I lived in Colorado. Now that I have moved down to Texas, it's not as easy to gamble because it's not legal here. Yeah, there's offshore companies that you can use, but it's kind of a blessing in disguise that it's still legal here just because it's saved me a lot of money. And anyways, yeah, I have noticed that they've been changing sponsors. And, you know, I think it's great in the sense that, you know, for a sponsorship. And if you want to gamble, you should be able to gamble. Like, I really do, like, you know, but I think it needs to be done responsibly. And I'm glad that they add those notices and helplines that people can get, because of course there are people that go way too far and they destroy their lives, and that's just really sad to see. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't see a problem with UFC having gambling sponsorships.
Yeah, no, I think it's par for the course. You think that would go with that. So I just didn't know, you know, I was thinking, well, DraftKings was going to have more of an exclusive position, you know what I mean, versus some of the others, but they are letting in.
I mean, that's DraftKings is the one I hear the most. Like I'll, when I'm watching the fights at home and I'm just not looking at the TV, I'll constantly hear John Onik or one of the, you know, broadcasters saying, brought to you by DraftKings. But I have noticed they've been bringing in other betting companies. But I admittedly myself, I don't really pay attention to the whole betting side as much as I used to.
Right. Now, did so back in around UFC 262, UFC became public with Endeavor, right? And then did Endeavor end up buying WWE? Did they merge, or how did that? Are you familiar with any of that?
Yeah. So from what I understand, the UFC was bought by Endeavor. And of course, Dana and the Fertitta brothers, they made they cash in on their investment. I think in 2001 or 2002, if I remember correctly, they bought the UFC for $2 million, and they turned it into a $4+ billion profit. But yeah, recently I from what I remember was that the UFC and the WWE merged to create a company called TKO, which went public on the stock exchange. So that's from what I understand is, and I think that happened this year, this year.
I think the TKO thing was this year. The Endeavor thing happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on what that does to the franchise? Does that change kind of the spirit? Like the old UFC was just like, man, your fighters had big ass pictures of like beef jerky and shit on their pants. You know what I mean? Like they're like NASCAR cars, right? And they had their sponsors. Just, you know, I remember I was going to buy I had a chance to buy like a shoulder of Aspen Lads for a first PFL. So anyway, you know, like they're just selling quadrants, you know, but now you can't do that. Everybody wears their crypto.com shirt, you know, their Venom stuff. And so you see any downside of the over businessification of the franchise there?
You know, I don't, you know, there, you know, it goes kind of both ways for me. I could see where like back in the day and to this day, fighters rightfully so probably want more of a right to have their sponsors or whatnot on the shorts and stuff. I mean, I know Monster exclusively sponsors some fighters. So that's why you'll see some UFC fighters with the Monster logo on their, on their shorts, and others you won't. So, but I think that Monster is the only sponsor that you can get on your UFC shorts that is not Venom. So I totally get why, like nowadays, with especially how big the UFC has gotten, it wouldn't be appropriate probably for a fighter to have like a, you know, a condom company advertisement on their shorts. But you would think that, man, like, you know, some of these bigger fighters, they could just get one reputable sponsor. I don't see a problem with having it, but you know, I understand with the UFC that they're such a big company nowadays. Once Reebok, I think this was back in 2014 when they officially sponsored, that's when they went away with the, you know, self-promotion on your shorts and everything. So it's kind of been that way since.
How many times have I had to explain what Manscaped means or the origins of that? You know what I mean? So, I mean, yeah, there's a condom company here, but Manscaped is kind of close to sure. that period, man. It's kind of funny. Like,
but yeah. You know,
go ahead.
I will say one thing, you know, they're no longer able to put the sponsorships on their shorts, but that's a perfect opportunity now for them is to use their social media. That's one thing I do not understand why fighters are, they don't utilize their social media as much as they can. All the sponsorships and the outreach of the fans that they can, you know, ultimately gain using social media. A perfect example of a fighter that I was thinking about that has done such a great job outside of his fights to promote himself is Sean O'Malley. That guy does social media. He does merchandise. He does commercials. He does multiple sponsorships. Like, it's amazing how much, from what I understand, he's probably close on the number of money he's made outside of the UFC compared to the money he's made with the UFC. Now that he's won a championship, it's probably more on the UFC, like how much he's made per fight. But that guy has made a killing outside of the UFC. And I just don't understand why some fighters don't do that.
I know that Gilbert Burns was trying to do some stuff with a supplement company down in Brownsville for a while. Some of these other guys kind of dabble in it, but right. They're not really effectively or as effectively doing that. I know some of them have, not an OnlyFans, but you can subscribe to their Instagram.
Yeah.
Subscription and get exclusive content with the five. That's okay. You know, especially, you know, you can rack up a couple of hundred thousand followers pretty quick.
I think they should do it. Anything you can to build your brand and make more money outside of fighting. Why would you not? It, you know?
Oh, I'm absolutely. I'm all about it. So, and it's really good. Like, RDA or,
can't seem to hear you. I think your volume went out.
All right. You're back again.
There we go. I can hear you now.
No, man. So anyway, like these fighters can, greater utilize their social media because, you know, they're only, you know, a couple of fights away. Real quick before we go, what are some of the things that you've seen lead to an early demise in a UFC contract where you get, is it just, do you think it's a form of how many fights? I mean, for some people, I don't want to say Paul Felder, but other, like, it seems like they lose fights all the time. They still keep them, you know, keep them around. What are some of the things that you think are either kisses of death or whatever for a UFC fighter losing a contract?
Certainly losing is not going to help you. Now, how you just brought up, there's fighters that lose that will remain. However, most more than likely those fighters that have lost, you know, more recently are on massive losing streaks. They had a major winning streak in their past career. They were close to a belt or their fan favorite. So that's exactly why they're still on. But, you know, if you're an up and coming fighter and you get signed post contender series and you get a 3-4 fight contract and you go 1-3, you're more than likely not going to get re-signed. It's like,
Let's look at Platinum Mike Perry real quick. I know we got a few more. Like, so what did you track him? Now, of course he's now doing great at BKFC, but what got Platinum canned, you think, beside bringing in his girlfriend as a corner? But that was kind of a shocker. But
you know, I don't
know.
I honestly do not know. I mean, I don't, from my understanding, I think he might have just, the UFC might not have, you know, offered him a contract. And I also think he looked at it like, this is my opportunity as a free agent to go, you know, field offers and see how much I can make. And I think at that moment when he's, when BKFC, they were looking for a guy like a Mike Perry to give a lot of money to come. And look at the success he's had. I mean, he's on a hell of a win streak. He's definitely making good money, no doubt, not just through BKFC, but through his sponsors.
Like Luke Rockhold, he stuck around for a long time and finally huge L's and had to go, right, pretty much. I don't know. But it is interesting to see. And like Ben Rothwell, I didn't even know he left UFC. I had no idea. Then one day I wake up, poof, he's in BKFC. There he is. Anyway, it's kind of strange, right?
Yeah, no, sure. Yeah, I mean, like Mike Perry, Rothwell, Luke Rockhold, I follow like the social media and like the interviews and stuff. From my recollection, a lot of these guys, I think their UFC contract has ended. They had an opportunity maybe to stay around and re-sign, but they said, I'm going to go field offers. I'm going to go see what, you know, what other companies are willing to give me, you know, for my time. And I think because they're ex-UFC fighters, they have that ability to go to like the PFL, BKFC, now, all those other organizations and make some serious money.
Johnson, Anthony Rumble Johnson, didn't he jump somewhere before his untimely passing or not?
Yes, I think he went to Bellator.
He went to Bellator.
I don't know if he left because he didn't get signed again. I don't know if they severed the contract. I honestly don't know what the whole situation with that is, but I do know he went to Bellator.
That's right. I forgot about that. So that's just another interesting franchise. But now that Bellator is merged, you know,
that's
going to be some interesting combinations of fighters and weight classes and stuff like that. So, so it is kind of interesting. Do you think some of these other competitors are going to draw some folks away from UFC, or you think that UFC has to work harder to stay on their game?
You know, there was a recent press conference that Dana pointed out, you know, and I tend to believe it. And I think you see it. People are not, like, including myself, I'm not buying PFL or, right, you know, past Bellator pay-per-views. I haven't gone to one of those events live. People aren't spending the money to go to those events or buy really the pay-per-views. And I'm not knocking the organizations on themselves or the fighters that go there, but unless a fighter is getting big money,
right,
I don't see really the draw to leave. I mean, a lot of the fighters that I've talked to, for example, On Location, they've you know, through the experience, they've said they would rather retire than leave the UFC or get cut. You know, I really think a lot of fighters in those other organizations, if they had the opportunity to come back to the UFC, they would. I think it just comes down to the money, you know? And even the fighters that never have fought in the UFC that fight for PFL, I think if they had a good opportunity to go to the UFC, I think they would take it because it's the premier organization.
That's true.
I mean,
well, man, that's it. We're down to 40 seconds, but that's a wrap. I know it went pretty quick. Sorry about those technical difficulties that were on our end, but
that
knocked me out. But hey, thanks for coming on the show today. Do you have an Instagram account or anything, or if anybody has any questions for you, how they can contact you, Alec?
Thank you for having me, Bruce. I do appreciate you having me on the show. My Instagram, you can follow me at Alec_94237, and you could also go on LinkedIn and just look up my name, Alec Kernishan. And those could be the ways you could follow me or get linked up.
I know, and your Instagram is quite a gallery of your collective experiences and with the fighters and knowledge there. So definitely, it's worth checking out. Okay, folks, here was another great episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Don't forget to see us on our Facebook page. We're on Apple Podcasts. That's right. We're on iHeartMedia, and now we're on Amazon Audible. It's a little podcast that could. So multiple ways to come see us. And don't be a stranger. So hopefully we'll see you again before Christmas time. And until then, everybody have a great week and a blessed week and a safe week. And we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Thank you, Alec. See ya.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Have a good one, everyone.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.